Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. And by the Rockstar Chronicles Series 1, my new book, featuring over 45 intimate conversations with the greatest music legends the world will ever know, available now at BookBaby.com and Amazon.com. Kenny Laguna has been in the music industry as a musician, songwriter, singer, and producer for nearly five decades. His resume is as diverse as his talents, including bubblegum, punk, rock, indie rock, blue-eyed soul, and more. He has produced Darlene Love, Bill Medley, Edwin Starr, The Steve Gibbons Band, Bow Wow Wow, including the band's biggest hit, I Want Candy, the soundtrack to the Andy Warhol movie, Lonesome Cowboys, and he wrote and produced for Berserkly Records with Jonathan Richman and Greg Kinn. Kenny Laguna is Joan Jett's longtime producer, songwriting partner, and partner in their label, Blackheart Records, along with his wife, high school sweetheart, Merle Laguna, and their daughter, Carrie Ann Brickman. He has produced many Blackheart artists, including Girl in a Coma, Cherie Curry, and The Vacancies. Starting at the tender age of 12 years old, Kenny was playing keyboards for New York Radio High School Hops for $20 a day when he was recognized by an industry bigwig. This led to other doors that Kenny kicked open, and eventually he found himself producing and playing in bubblegum bands like Tommy James and the Shondells, Good Friends of the Station, The Archies, Shadows of Night, 1910 Fruit Gum Company, and the Ohio Express. By 1972, Kenny had played and sung on over 50 Billboard Top 40 hits. After the demise of Bubblegum, he was given the opportunity to produce for The Who's label in London, which would prime him for the next phase, punk rock. Kenny was asked to help and produce six songs in 8 days with a young singer named Joan Jett. Her former band, The Runaways, had broken up, but they were still contracted to do a project that was yet unfinished. Kenny and Joan immediately found they were kindred spirits and have collaborated on every Joan Jett album and hit ever since. In 2015, Kenny, alongside Jett, was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He felt honored to be standing next to his best friend, accepting the coveted award. After 35 years of creating music together, he and Jett are still touring the world, writing and recording new music. Please welcome legendary American songwriter and record producer, best known for his work with Joan Jett, Kenny Lagunda, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Kenny.
Hello. That's a great intro. I want to write that down.
You know, I really wanted you on the show. First of all, I love Joan. We have a lot in common. I was raised in Maryland. I actually did the Orioles Fantasy Camp 1 year before she did, 1990. And I always wanted to talk to her about that. I'm a big Oriole fan as well. But, I was a top 40 DJ back in the late 70s. And any guy that had been involved with so many big hits, especially from top 40 radio, is my hero. And that'd be you.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, hits are a miracle. Everyone, they're a miracle.
You were Tommy James. I had Tommy on the show many times. He's a great guy, and We talked about the old Morris Levy thing, and I'm sure you... Did you know Morris?
I know him really well.
Yeah.
And he was integral in the success of Black Art Records.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yep. When it was... we had various royalty streams that he didn't respect, but he really came through for John and I when we were struggling, and he was great. I mean, I had nothing to say. He told us what the deal was in the beginning,
right?
And obviously Tommy shared the pie that Morris helped himself to with a lot bigger than mine. But to tell you the truth, he said his records got to number 11 before we even knew if they were good. And that was a great start of a career.
Yeah, Tommy says if it wasn't for Morris Levy, there wouldn't have been a Tommy James. So,
well, I'm glad Tommy feels that way.
Yeah,
that's how I feel about the stuff we did. But when Jonestown was there, like Strawberries, he always gave great reports on our records, and he once made phone calls for John and me, so that I was set up to be promotion men, independent promotion men, and so I was a guy. It was like a record business. I was a made man, and I owe that to Morris. If he said this guy could be trusted, that's huge.
Yeah. I think Morris knew what a hit was. He could listen to it and say that's a hit. That's kind of a gift, I think.
Well, he doesn't give it enough credit. He may not have started it, but he was the guy behind KTEL.
Right.
Television advertising, which Time Life must make $1 billion on.
Yeah.
He invented that, he was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar Hill.
Yeah.
That was the first rap label. Morris. Birdland.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz Club. Morris. Right? Strawberry. He invented that.
Yeah.
And then after that was all those other ones that came later. Peaches and Coconuts. And it was all a copy of what Morris had done.
Mm-hmm.
He was a record man to the 10th degree. And to tell you the truth, if you knew how to negotiate, anybody talks bad about Morris, I take issue with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He was a gentleman, and he had honor. You had to understand how the street honor works. And, I had no problems dealing with Morris Levy. I thought he was the greatest.
Well, I have an uncle that had a store on Broadway, and he was... a little connected, should I say? So I kind of grew up with that kind of stuff. So
I can imagine.
I understand it.
Yeah, you kind of had to be connected to stay in business.
Exactly. Yeah, my dad had businesses since I was little. We had retail electronic stores and like gift shops in D.C. for years and years, and we dealt with New York all the time, and that's just like you said, that's the way you did business. That's all,
Well, I found it to be very, it was a more gratifying situation. Like now, I'm dealing with the big companies, and they even bought the records that were part of these old mafia labels.
Right.
And I just realized the other day somebody sent me some stuff about the Lemon Pipers, and I wrote in one of the songs in the Lemon Pipers, Green Tambourine. I noticed it's on at least three albums that are active today.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's almost no money, I don't get statements.
Right.
And I call women in the house and say, let's go look at that. I wrote the same here for the Yummy album. It's not a lot, but it's in print. They don't send statements,
Right.
So why are they different than Sonny Francesi? You ever hear of him?
Yes. Yep.
I didn't know him well, but he owned the label I was starting my career on,
yep.
Buddha. I love these guys.
Yeah.
They were straight talkers, They told me they weren't going to pay me, and they told me...
You know, I'm probably the only guy that hunted down Ivan Brown from the Lemon Pipers. I had him on the show. He was so happy to be on the show, yeah.
Was that the lead singer?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, Cole Lester made those records, and I wasn't aware of the band playing anything on that Green Tambourine album. Mm-hmm. I played on it.
Yeah, yeah, he's still trying to make a living. You know, him and his wife do music together, and he sent me a bunch of samples and things like that. You know, nice guy, really nice guy.
And a hell of a singer.
Yeah, good singer, very good singer.
But my song was Rainbow Tree, and I played off the chord on that album.
I know Rainbow Tree. We talked about that. Yeah. Yeah, sure did.
I imagine the band must have been freaking out at some point. I don't know. How is he feeling? Is he bitter about the fact that they, you know, and I never looked at them as a bubblegum band. I was just reading it up because somebody sent me a newspaper article about the Lemon Pipers when they had a hit. And, you know, they were grouped as psychedelic bubblegum. But they were totally different camp. I happen to straddle both camps, but they weren't Cousins Cats. They weren't bubblegum. They were, I always thought they were...
psychedelic. You know, kind of psychedelic, in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, they might have resented it. You know, they were more real. Like the Isle Express, they were nice fellows, too. But,
right.
You know, Joey Levine, those two hits, and Jeff and Jerry went to Ohio, and the first junior high school they went to, they saw a band playing, and they said, you want to be the Ohio Express? And boom, that was it.
Yep.
A little different than the Lemon Pipers, which, you know, they were the Lemon Pipers, I think. So, you know, I don't know. I think sometimes the people get ruined. And, you know, in a way, my part of it, maybe I feel guilty sometimes, but I put together the band that did Beatlemania.
Mm-hmm.
And those poor guys, the four that started it, you know, it's the guy who played Paul McCartney, Mitch Weissman. He was a talented guy, but then he became this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt it kind of set his whole life in a funny place. You know, he was like a star.
Right.
But he was a star playing Paul McCartney in a Broadway show.
Right.
So, you know, he had to acclimate his head, you know, reconcile all that. You know what I mean? So it's the same thing with these bubblegum bands. They had hit records, and the Isle Express, they didn't even hear them until they were on the radio.
I love the bubblegum bands, man. I love everything from the 60s that was on the radio. That was the greatest period in music was the 60s, you know? Especially for radio.
Oh, yeah, but you know, I'm just saying about, you know, where was the integrity? You know, like, we were making the records, but we didn't want to go out on the road.
Right.
Because we thought we were cooler than that.
Yeah.
But who knows? You know, we didn't get a lot of respect in America. When I went to England, the bubblegum thing was, I got a little more respect.
Mm-hmm.
And then when punk happened, everything turned around. The punks hated Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Right, right.
And they liked Yummy Yummy, which was like, I thought I was in the bizarro world, because I took so much shit, you know, for making bubblegum music, you know?
Yeah.
In America.
I heard that the Monkees were supposed to play Sugar Sugar, but then the Archies got it, and because the Monkees turned it down. Did you hear that?
No, I didn't even know the Monkees were allowed to turn things down.
Yeah, well, yeah, they got, you know, they got a little too big for their britches with Don Kirshner, which I thought Kirshner was, you know, a genius. You know, I mean, He helped the Monkees. He helped Kansas. He made Kansas a great band. But they got, they wanted to write their own music, and that's when they wrote Head, that album Head, but they turned down a lot of other projects, which, you know, could have made them a lot of money.
Well, it's funny how things are. I mean, the Monkees proved that they had more going on than people thought, because Mike Nesmith wrote that incredible song for Linda Ronstadt.
Right. Mm-hmm.
People get typecast. But the truth is, they were characters in a television show.
Yeah.
And they weren't Ricky Nelson either.
Yeah, you know, speaking of Ricky Nelson, guess who I talked to before I called you?
Tell me.
Matthew Nelson, you know, from the Nelsons.
I've met those guys.
Yeah, cool. Ricky Nelson's son. We talked about Ricky and Ozzy and everybody. Nice guy. Really nice guy.
Really nice people. I love them, yeah.
Yeah. Was it your idea to do Crimson and Clover for Joan?
The way that was, she pulled the album out of my vinyl back in 1980.
Right.
And she went, oh, I love this song, mm-hmm. you know. And the next day we were at a sound check, and she was fooling around with it, just for fun. And when she got done, all the people in the club mopping up and everything, they like stopped what they were doing and applauded,
mm-hmm.
which was a hint of something.
Right.
And then we continued, and then we did it live, and it was a much bigger reaction than any other song, including Isle of Rock and Roll.
Really?
So we put it in the set.
Yeah.
And then we decided, to do it. One day we went into a studio. We had an hour. And we did the whole set, which was I Love Rock and Roll, because we'd been playing that album before we recorded it for a year. And in the end, we scrapped everything except for Crimson and Clover that mm-hmm. day. So that song with her singing, is her singing live, like the original rock and roll?
Right.
She's playing in an ISO booth, playing the guitar and singing. And that's the performance. And mm-hmm. she really was inspired. She saw God. It was kind of, the gender is a little strange, but, the song isn't really about a girl. I mean, as near as I can tell from being around Tommy for 100 years, it's more about a feeling.
Yeah, exactly.
Trip,
Yeah.
But anyway, the song is what you make it.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that song. And it just sounded great. That's the story of that song. And we thought that was the hit. I thought, we thought I Love Rock and Roll was good. We thought it would be an FM classic, mm-hmm. like Bad Reputation. Bad Reputation, everybody remembers that as a hit single. It's a gold single.
Right.
But it was never released as a single, per se, and only when downloads happened did it go gold. It's never been a single.
Hmm. I want to mention something Joan did recently. I just had Mark Urselli on the show. He engineered the latest Angel Headed Hipster project that was created by Hal Wilner. And Joan was awesome on that track. She sang Jeepster on the album. She did a great job. That's probably my favorite song on the album.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, Joan's a big T-Rex fan.
Yeah.
She got and her guitar player's on there too. And I think, she and Hal got along great. And obviously we work with your guy there.
Mm-hmm.
Very sad that Hal got sick.
Yeah, I know. From COVID, right? I think he got,
Yep.
It's horrible. That's horrible. Kenny, you're the real deal, man. There isn't many guys like you left in the industry, And I just thank you for everything you've done. I just wish you could do more.
Well, maybe we will.
Yeah. What about, is there any plans for a new album from Joan?
Yeah, always.
Yeah?
And then we're just setting up, now that, you know, SIR closed.
Right.
That was, we had the best locker in New York, which is great. You know, like when we started, we used to look at these super bands that had these, and then we eventually had the best locker. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a room. And we were so proud that they closed.
Yeah.
We sold the building.
Really?
So we're setting up a rehearsal studio in my house. And then we're, you know, John's still writing. We're, mm-hmm. You know, we're all trying. And our guitar player, Dougie Needles, writes really good. We're definitely going to make more records. And we've been lucky. We have various projects. Rebel Girls is a book
mm-hmm.
about... It's not a lot of musicians. The first book has one musician, it's Joan. But there are people like the scientist Curry and famous writers and just women who were groundbreakers and they made an album and Joan contributed to that.
Right.
And then there was an Alzheimer thing that CAA put together to raise money for Alzheimer's. We contributed to that. And then we have this one we did with Hal Wilner. That's great. She mm-hmm. just did a duet with Miley Cyrus, which is...
Yeah.
I mean, Miley is a good friend, and she's massive. I mean, she just announced that she did it, and Joan was trending like top 10. So, you know, we're doing a lot of stuff.
Good. And I love the movie, Bad Reputation. I saw the movie. It was great. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, good. Good to see it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Barry Ann produced that.
Yeah. I've had Lita on the show several times, and Cherie, and I'm friends with Susie Quattro, who I know Joan likes a lot.
Yes, we're in touch with Susie.
Yeah, she's good. You know, I love what she does on the side, man. That wood carving thing. That's incredible with the saw, the electric saw.
Oh, yeah. She had a terrible accident a couple of years ago. Terrible.
Really? I didn't know that.
She fell like 30 feet.
Holy crap. Huh.
Yeah, she's good.
Yep. What do you think? What'd you think of Kim Fowley? Cherie, I think, took care of Kim in his final days, didn't she?
Well, for a week or two.
Yeah.
I think it didn't end well. You know, he had a girlfriend and everything, but...
Right.
Yeah. Kim, we like Kim a lot, Johnny and me.
Mm-hmm.
We go a long way with him. I thought he was a character. He was way out, you know.
Yeah.
Way out. Yeah, it was nice. I don't know how him and Cherie got together because they spent decades quarreling.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad they reconciled.
That's good, yeah. Yeah, she told me she
did.
Yeah. She told me when she had him over her house and kind of taking care of him and everything.
But, you know, The Runaways was such a soap opera. The movie, The Runaways,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I was, John and I were executive producers. I kind of lost control of it because you do when you deal with the Hollywood guys, you know.
Yeah.
But my initial idea was to do like Cold Case and have this drama because, you know, they all fight. They fight with me. They fight, I guess they fight with everybody but Joan. But, you know, the thing with Kim and the girls and how they blame him for this and that and the other thing.
Right.
You know, while they're blaming him, they should give him credit too because he was a, you know, Barnum and Bailey type guy, you know. But that's what the movie I wanted to make, is how that year and a half of high school age, which is when the five of them were together, they were together 3.5 years, but when the five of them were together, you know, how it affected their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's still like a thing over their lives that they never shook.
How much of that you think was true? What they said about all that?
What, scandal?
Yeah, the scandal.
Not true.
Really?
Not true. No way.
Yeah.
Not true. And, you know, they said wait until he was dead.
Yeah. Well, I know two people, definitely, Lita and Joan. I don't think they take crap from anybody.
That's right, you know, and, you know, it's just bullshit. And, you know, to that there's no defending against that shit.
Yeah.
The more you defend, the more you dig a hole.
Right, right.
So, you know, you just, there's a long history of bullshit and trying to get into the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, picture being the girls who turned down Idol of Rock and Roll.
Right.
Thank God.
A couple of things people don't know about you. You kind of restarted, I guess, Darlene Love's career when she was having a hard time.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
She was cleaning houses in W.
Wow. And then she wrote a book or something, and I don't think she...
Much later. Yeah, she wrote the book much later.
Yeah.
I took her back to New York, and then she got into the Broadway show,
mm-hmm.
Leader of the Pack. Another, you know, it was a great thing when it was in the bottom line, and when the Broadway people took over, it's like the story of getting involved with these Broadway and movie people, you know, they always know better, but
yeah.
The thing that was going on at the bottom line was unbelievable. Paul Schaefer played Phil Spector.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. I think they even had Sonny Bono in there for a couple of shows, you know. It was unbelievable.
Huh.
Because once Broadway took it over, they wanted it to be a Michael Jackson thing. And
right.
It kind of fell apart. But, so we brought her in there, and then we got her a record deal on Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Springsteen crowd got involved.
Yeah.
Well, Steve and a good friend of ours. And God bless her. She got into the Hall of Fame.
Mm.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I think she's still around doing shows, I think, isn't she?
Apart from COVID, yeah.
Yeah.
She's around, and she owns Christmas.
Mm-hmm. That's right. She had the big Christmas hits. Yeah.
More than one.
Yeah.
She had Christmas Day, please come home, but, you know, Winter Wonderland she did. You know, between her and Ronnie,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to rock and roll Christmas, they're like,
Yeah. That's true. The other thing was you were roommates with Sissy Spacek, right?
That is true.
Nobody would think that.
Isn't that something?
That is something. That blew me away. She was a pop star.
Where did you find that?
What's that?
Where did you find that information?
Oh, I dig deep. But she was a country, she was a singer, right, at that time?
Yes, and she had a record that had a little bit of success in reaction to John Lennon and Yoko's Two Virgins.
Cover. Uh-huh, right.
It was John, You've Gone Too Far This Time, so...
Huh.
Yeah, so, you know, I was trying to help her with her singing career, and then when she decided to take acting lessons, I walked her to the first lesson. I believe I paid for that lesson.
Wow.
And, you know, nobody took it that seriously. And the next thing I know, she's got a part in a movie with Lee Marvin.
Jeez.
Prime Cut.
And yeah.
It's an amazing movie. And for me, I'm an animal activist and a vegan. And
yeah.
That movie, I love that movie.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Sissy, bless her, she, you know, when she became a superstar, instead of becoming part of the Hollywood scene.
Yeah, I love her. She's a great actress.
She's great, but
yeah.
She didn't become part of that Hollywood scene. She moved to Charlottesville, Virginia,
mm-hmm.
and raised her family so they would not be...
Good for her.
...Hollywood brats. And,
good for her.
You know, she remains pretty down to earth. Not pretty, down to earth.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know her like I used to, but we somehow touch base every few years.
Mm-hmm. Another guy that was involved, too, was Bobby Bloom, the guy who sang Montego Bay, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bobby, yeah, he was another roommate.
Mm-hmm. How about
yeah,
that?
Bobby was very talented, but he was crazy, and he had a screw loose when it came to women. he used to beat women.
Oh, crap.
And he went out with a gangster's daughter, so...
Oh, that's not good.
That's all you need to know. You know, he shot with his own gun.
Mm-hmm. Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, you don't have to be Confucius to know don't beat up a gangster.
Very true. I want to say some things. Joan Jett's band, it's still the same band, right? It's awesome. I love the... And, of course, you're great in the band as well. I actually covered you guys a while back at Busch Gardens in Tampa, and I got some fantastic pictures of Joan. I was right up there.
Oh,
yep.
Send them along if you ever get a chance.
I'll send them to you if you want. They're like I'm on stage with her. They're fantastic photos. Actually, they put me on Joan's site when I did the review.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Cool.
But you know what I love about Joan? She's got the personality on stage. I love when she smirks and smiles and stares at the audience. You know, that's really something, the way she plays with the audience, you know?
Yeah, she's a very, she has the gift.
She has the gift. Yes, she does. She's incredible. She really is. Well, one of these days, I'd like to interview Joan and talk about Dream Week and the Orioles, because I've always wanted to do that.
Yeah, she tore a rotator cuff trying to. I don't know. It's one of your great Oriole knuckleballers. You would know who it is. One of those four great guys in 1969. You know, was there teaching her, and she just tried a little too hard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, stay in touch with Julie. We'll get to it.
Okay. Yeah, she's a lefty, right? I think she pitched during fantasy camp.
Yeah, but she bats right.
Right. I hear she was a pretty good hitter, too.
Yeah, she was always the best in the fuck. It was embarrassing, and I was always the worst.
Kenny, here's a question I ask everybody, and I get some very interesting answers, okay? If you had a Field of Dreams wish like the movie to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Dean Martin.
Dean Martin, really?
Yeah.
Cool. Have you met him?
No.
No?
No. After that, Elvis.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. I interviewed Petula Clark, and she had a thing for Dean Martin. She said he's the nicest man, and a lot of people didn't take him serious because they thought he was drunk, you know, when he did interviews and things like that. But, you know, just such a nice guy who never rehearsed.
Well, he was also a very smart guy. People don't realize he was a brilliant businessman. He mm-hmm. was the biggest stockholder of the individual people in RCA NBC. And, yeah, I mean, but I just love his style.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a big Frank Sinatra fan, too.
Me too.
I saw him five times in concert.
Oh, me too. Sinatra was God in my family.
Me too. Me too. Yeah.
Until he endorsed Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. Well, you know, they were friends in the movie business, you know?
Yeah. Well, I get all that.
Yeah.
But it's why we try to keep a low profile with, the politics as best we can, you know, because I just saw my parents really get to think, they were going to school as communists, for Christ's sake.
Jeez.
You know, they were not really, you know, they thought the Kennedys were too right-wing. So,
right, right.
I learned that much. You can really piss people off with your politics.
I'm glad you said that, because why alienate half your audience? You know?
Right.
Why?
Right.
Why? It doesn't make sense. Johnny Carson always said that. He says, I don't want to tell people my political views. Why should I alienate half my audience, you know? Why piss people off? Keep it to yourself, you know? I mean, if you want to donate, fine, but, you know. Today, they're just coming out attacking people, which I don't get, you know? I mean, I don't care who you're for. You know, you shouldn't attack anybody. You know, just play your music.
Yeah.
Kenny, have anything else you'd like to add? Anything else to promote?
No, I'm pretty good.
Yeah? I just want to tell you, I'm a big admirer of yours. You know, everything you did for Joan, when the chips were down, you guys pulled it together, selling records out of the back of your car, which is amazing. That's something I would probably never do. But you guys did it. You got perseverance, and you got the job done, and you guys are huge, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So keep doing what you're doing, man.
Well, thank you so much for you taking the time with me, and we'll see sometime you do it with John. So.
That'll be great. Kenny, I'm going to send you a copy of my book. It's I did 45 interviews with... you won't believe the list of people I chatted with, and like 12 of them have passed away already, unfortunately. But do you want the book or do you want the ebook?
Can I get both?
Yeah, I'll send you both. How's that?
That'd be great.
Fantastic.
Okay.
All right, Kenny. Safe. Thank you so much, man. Take care. Stay safe out there.
Thank you.
All right. Bye bye now. For more information about Kenny Laguna and Joan Jett, visit www.lagunatunes.com. Kenny Laguna discography at www.kennylaguna.com/discography. www.blackheart.com for Blackheart Records. www.joanjett.com, Joan Jett official website. Very special thanks to Julie Radar with Blackheart Records for arranging this interview with Kenny Laguna, and the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the music happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, please contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. Hey, it's real news, people. And of course, my new book is finally out, entitled The Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1. Chronicles, truths, confessions, and wisdom from the music legends that set us all free. Order yours today on hardcover ebook at bookbaby.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest legends the world will ever know. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. God bless and be safe out there. Bye-bye now.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.